Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good morning, everyone. It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. My name is Jamil Smith. I'm an independent journalist and political columnist, and I'll be filling in while Brian is off this week. On today's show, we're going to be talking to civil rights attorney Alexandra Brodsky, Brooklyn NAACP President L. Joy Williams, and New York Times transit reporter Emma Fitzsimmons. Plus, we'll be taking your calls on every New Yorker's favorite topic, of course, the subway. But without any further ado, folks, there was some news last night. As of now, the effort to repeal and replace Obamacare is dead. Again. Now, two additional Republican senators, Mike Lee of Utah and Jerry Moran of Kansas, both announced that they would not vote for the motion to begin consideration of the revised and secretly devised Senate bill, bringing the total number opposed to four. That's too many for Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who couldn't afford to lose a single Republican vote, and as such, had delayed any consideration of the bill until John McCain recovered from a recent surgery to remove a blood clot above his left eye. Now, with Senators Susan Collins and Rand Paul already having said last week that they would vote no on this, the Lee and Moran defections mean that this third version of the Senate bill will go nowhere. Now, President Trump, after learning the news, tweeted this out at 10:17 p.m. Eastern, quote, "Republicans should just repeal, in all caps, failing Obamacare now, and work on a new health care plan that will start from a clean slate. Dems will join in, exclamation point. Now, just more than a half an hour later, McConnell issued a statement that appeared to agree. He called for the Senate to pass an Obamacare repeal with a two-year delay, quote, "to provide for a stable transition period to a patient-centered healthcare system that gives Americans access to quality, affordable care." Now, there are no guarantees that a straight repeal of the Affordable Care Act would pass. The Congressional Budget Office previously scored that, estimating that by 2026, premiums would increase by 50% and the number of uninsured Americans would go up by 32 million. But to even consider McConnell's idea, the Senate would need to vote to consider the health care bill that House Republicans passed, which, if they were going to do that, they wouldn't have written their own bill. Now, but before we get caught up in process, perhaps we should ask whether McConnell is willing to change his methods. No hearings or public debate for legislation that proposed to remake nearly a fifth of the American economy. This is what Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut, a member of the Senate Health Committee, told MSNBC host Rachel Maddow last night.
The public hearing process is not just for show. It actually is a means to get real feedback from professionals and experts. And I think part of the hesitancy of a lot of Republicans, and I put Jerry Moran in this category to support this bill, are that this bill wasn't just a moral monstrosity. It was also an intellectual train wreck. It just didn't work. It didn't accomplish any of the things they set out to do.
Well, what are those things exactly? What does the Republican Party in control of Congress and the White House actually want? And after this latest failure to get Trump a bill to sign, what are they going to do now? Here to provide us some insight is Republican strategist Evan Siegfried, the author of the book GOP GPS, How to Find the Millennials and Urban Voters the Republican Party Needs to Survive. Evan, welcome back to WNYC.
Oh, thank you for having me, and great to be on with you, Jamil.
So, as King George asked in Hamilton, Evan, what comes next?
Well, I should get Hamilton tickets first and see it. I still haven't been able to. But what comes next is Mitch McConnell is going to be putting up a straight repeal bill with no replacement. And the whole strategy behind it is he knows he can't get the 51 votes he needs to do the full-up repeal. And he just wants to be able to say, listen, I tried, it failed, let's move on to tax reform.
Okay, so he's going to demand an outright repeal of Obamacare. Does this delay strategy is not really actually something he wants to do? It's just for show, is what you're saying.
It's for show so he can at least go to the base and say we tried. The calculus that is going on behind closed doors is that after 7 years of telling our base that we will repeal and replace, that they will be angry, but that they are going to be angrier at other things like the fake news media. That is the one blessing as someone who has opposed Trump using that term and other Republicans. That's the one strategic blessing, because our base is sort of trained their fire on that, and they're much more rabid about the quote-unquote fake news than they are about repeal and replace right now.
Listeners, my guest is Evan Siegfried, Republican strategist and author, and I want to hear from you, especially if you're a Republican, especially if you're a Trump voter. Now, what are your thoughts and questions about the failure for now of the Senate effort to repeal and replace Obamacare? And if Obamacare repeal was your issue, the reason you voted for Trump, are you disappointed? The number to call is 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. We also want to know what you think of, you know, what Republicans should do next about Obamacare, about anything. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And what is the appeal of being a Republican right now? The party controls the presidency, both houses of Congress, but still hasn't been able to achieve one of its signature promises to repeal and replace Obamacare. So Republicans, call and tell us, what's the appeal of being a Republican? 212-433-9692. Let me ask you the same thing, Evan. What is the appeal of being a Republican right now, given what President Trump is doing and given what this Congress is or is not doing?
We have hats. That's about it. And they're not even cool hats. But in all seriousness, there is a very big problem with the Republican Party. I was talking to a friend of mine last night who's very conservative, and she said to me, you know, I'm thinking about going and joining the Democratic Party, not because it represents me and my values, but at least they get results and get stuff done when they govern. The feeling among many Republicans, at least who are strategists and work on Capitol Hill, is that we're the gang that can't shoot straight. We make the New York Knicks look like a competent organization.
Ooh.
And yeah, that's how bad it's gotten. And when you have such incompetence controlling both the House, the Senate, and the White House, it really does not achieve results. We have had strategic blunders since day one. Chuck Schumer was terrified that we would do infrastructure first, because that would peel off several Democrats and get Democrats out of the gate in the Trump presidency, supporting a major Trump initiative, and set the tone for future stuff, and it would play right into the nationalist feelings, especially when you have all of these infrastructure projects. But for some reason, Trump and the White House insisted on health care. And the president said it's going to be repeal and replace, and it's going to be with something terrific. And he never outlined a plan. At the same time, Republicans never outlined a plan for 7 years. And there was a strategic political move for not outlining it, because when you actually go out and flesh out a plan and give details, people can't project onto something that doesn't exist. So it's like with President Obama, when he campaigned on hope and change, many people didn't know exactly what hope and change was, so they projected their own versions of it. And it was the same with Republicans with repeal and replace.
Now, what are the Republican priorities? As Senator Murphy was saying, that this bill doesn't accomplish them. Obviously, you know, this bill was going to potentially put tens of millions of people off of their insurance, whether by making it unaffordable or simply kicking them off of Obamacare. What are the Republican priorities here? Is it simply to eliminate President Obama's signature accomplishment? Is that really the main goal here?
Well, I think Republicans started to realize with the AHCA, pardon me, there are so many acronyms these days. Republicans started to realize in the first iteration of the AHCA that Obamacare had become much more popular than it was in 2010, and that we had established health coverage as a right. And while I personally, as a Republican, do not believe it should be a right, I also believe that once you have a right that has been established within a society, it is very bad when you try and take it away. So that question is settled. And Republicans are trying to figure out a way that they can get to not repeal and replace, but repair. But the problem is, while I know many Democrats and independents would love this, the base of the Republican Party would see it as a betrayal of everything, that they had been sold out, hoodwinked. And so they have had to move at a glacial pace in order to even get our base there. Last month, Politico had a poll out that said 65% of the American people want Republicans and Democrats to work together to repair Obamacare.
Right.
And only 18% want the GOP to go it alone. You can easily guess who the 18% most likely were, or what party they were registered to.
Right.
And I think we're going to move forward, because when this straight-up repeal likely fails, you're going to see premiums increase in some of the Obamacare exchanges because of the uncertainty in the market that has been going on, as well as just health insurance companies are not popular for the very reason of they increase premiums. And
right.
You're going to see more and more calls to do something and to lower costs and improve the quality of care. And Republicans, as we're in the majority, we do have a responsibility to do something.
Let's go to the calls. Perry in Manhattan. Go ahead.
This is Perry. I'm a lifelong Republican. I voted for Donald Trump in November. I now have buyer's remorse. And when I have to do the hard work of examining my decision, which I made last November, I have to say, I have to take the blame and say, I am an idiot.
Oh.
Because, you know, at the moment, it seemed like it's like making a meal choice. You say, oh, let's try this on the menu. If it doesn't work out, it's just a bad meal. But it turns out you have selected a poisoned food chain. It's not one meal. It's your nutrition for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I have spoken to others who feel they, too, just didn't take the required thought that was required before you pull that lever in the voting booth, because you have poisoned your food chain. And that's how we undo this. I do not have the answer.
Evan, what do you think about that?
Well, how we undo... Well, first of all, Harry, thank you very much for the call. That was really great.
Yes,
there are many
you,
Trump voters who have had buyer's remorse. And then there are some, especially in deeply Republican counties, throughout the country, who have been thrilled beyond belief with what is happening. If there was some information that came out yesterday that showed the approval rating for Trump in those heavily Republican counties that voted for Mitt Romney in 2012 is through the roof. The president's close to 70% and 80% in some counties. But that's because these are counties and areas of the country that have felt like they've been abused by politicians, particularly Democrats, as well as the press, for slights, both real and imagined. Often we have politicians come out every election cycle, overpromise, and then end up under-delivering whenever they get the vote. And that's part of why Donald Trump won, because he wasn't a politician. And people liked it when somebody like you, Jamil, or me, said what the president or the president was doing on the campaign trail was inappropriate and wrong. They liked seeing us freak out. It was sort of this thing where they would, even though it was against their own good, they would vote for him anyway. There are people who wake up every morning and are excited to read what he's tweeted out next, and that's because they think he's sticking it to their enemies. And that's the appeal of Donald Trump now, because he isn't that traditional politician. Things that would make or kill any other politician's career only help Donald Trump with his base.
Yeah. Isaac in Somerset, New Jersey. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi. I just wanted to comment in general about Trump and the ACA. In my opinion, I know he said he'd repeal it day one, but in my opinion, that's just like political jockeying. That's a game. Everyone says they're going to do that right away. At the end of the day, I'm a Trump voter. We understood health care is a complicated issue. It's complex. You want to provide as many services as you can to as many people within an affordable range, you know, and keep prices down. We knew this would take time. It took Obama 2 years, so it will take Trump 2 years. It's not like, whoa, this major disappointment, like the hype that's out there. That's just my take. Thank you.
Okay. On that note, I want to ask, Isaac, if you're still on the line, and also Evan, does it matter then that there were no hearings? There was no public debate about this bill. There was no public defense of the bill by President Trump himself, as similar to how President Obama did a few years ago. What were your thoughts on the lack of, you know, public, you know, construction of this bill, and frankly, you know, how it ended up contributing to the result?
Well, I think that the blame for the failure of repealing and replacing Obamacare needs to go to both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue, both to the House, the Senate, and to the president himself. The president never forcefully went out and rallied around the country to pass this bill. Whether you like Obamacare or not, if you look at the playbook that President Obama used, he was crisscrossing the country, doing as many interviews as possible, holding rallies, meeting with senators and congressmen at any hour of the day, whereas the president himself did not seem to be fully engaged in it. At the same time, he did not seem to really understand how complex the legislative process is. To give you an example, in the AHCA, he was with House leaders 2 days before the first iteration failed, mm-hmm. and he said, why are you guys sweating the details? And this was with the Freedom Caucus. And the Freedom Caucus, who arguably had the most draconian views on the AHCA, all stood up in alarm and said, whoa, this president doesn't even realize that when you argue, or the finer points are people's lives and it impacts them. They felt like he was checked out and that he was more of a CEO and who viewed them as middle management and VPs, and he was supposed to come in at the end for the photo op. He needs to be on the ground and engaged. I think that there's been we've been talking about how the president is tweeting, et cetera, and his behavior. I think the president could do a great deal of good for his own agenda if he focused less on gripes with Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski and more on, hey, here's a personal story.
Right.
I think that also overall it's reflective of the White House and its problems. This week is Made in America Week, which, if you actually look at all of these weeks, they aren't really doing anything. It's sort of like Tim Cook coming out and saying, I'm going to propose the Apple iPhone 201. We haven't even made a prototype. It's just a thing I have an idea about.
Yeah, and also
nothing to sell.
And also claiming that he, you know, has created 45,000 coal jobs when there's maybe 50,000 coal jobs in the country right now. I mean, it just these are kind of claims that just seems like he's just trying to either distract or either, you know, take credit for something he's not willing
not
to actually undertake the work to do.
Can I just get in something on health care? I'm sorry.
Sure. Yes. Hey, how you doing, Peter? Welcome to WNYC.
Yeah, it's Isaac.
Oh, Isaac. Isaac. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just want to get into something about the health care. You know, the issue you raised before, that being that, what do you think about it, you know, being drafted and closed doors and everything like that? Well, I kind of think, yeah, now it's out in the public, it's debated, and it's going to be debated.
Mm-hmm.
When you make a rough draft, you have to do that in closed doors because you need to get things together. You need to formulate a plan. You can't formulate when everybody's screaming and yelling. You need to do that in closed doors. When it's formulated at what's being done, it has been debated. The senators went home July 4th weekend. There was a lot of noise and media attention, and it's still ongoing. It's not like it was passed via closed doors. It was a rough draft through closed doors. The debate, it takes time. And I do agree that Trump, his personality is not misogynistic like Obama, and he's lacking those mathematical and that kind of skills, although I think he does have potential to rally the base. So I agree that it's a bit of a disappointment he did not rally the base.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't really blame him for not being so mathematical and getting involved in the details. You know, that's not his type, and I'm sure there's plenty of other capable people that can do that. So there's a little blame with Trump, but it's not like, over the hill, like major disappointment.
All right, Isaac, thank you for calling in. Peter in Allentown, PA, welcome to WNYC.
Hi. Yeah, I'm a Charlie Dent Republican from Allentown, transplanted from New York. The worst thing that ever happened was Trump becoming involved with the Republican Party. He's not a Republican. He's pursuing his personal vendetta for insults going back to that correspondence dinner several years ago. It's so obvious. His whole intent, everything he says, is to disparage and eliminate any accomplishment by Obama. And he's just taken over the whole party. And it's become just a total wreck. There's no plan. All it is driving a thumb into the eye of any Democrat. It's just so obvious, and it's so terribly terribly embarrassing for Republicans.
Yeah.
They've seen Trump as a method to get someone in that office that'll sign anything. And when they're doing health care, Republicans are doing health care, and they're saying, we need a win. You need a win? What kind of political planning, what kind of patriotism is that? We need a win no matter what it takes. It's just absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. Thank you for your call, Peter. Evan, to what degree has Republican Party or just conservatism, period, just become about upsetting Democrats, upsetting liberals?
I take a slightly different view than Peter. First of all, I do agree with Peter that there are things within the party that are not going well. Pew released a study in May that found that 23% of Republicans aged 18 to 29 left the party in the 15-month span of December 2015 to March 2017. You can realize what coincides with that. The party is contracting. At the same time, you're seeing the party or many members of the base defend Trump at all costs, such as in the Donald Trump Jr. scandal. They're going out and saying, what about X? Well, Hillary did this. Or, well, right. The Russian lawyer got into the country when she shouldn't have. Why did Loretta Lynch do it? But that doesn't excuse the fact that Donald Trump Jr. went out and willingly said, I love it, when he was told that the Russian government wanted to give him damaging and sensitive information.
Right.
There's a willingness to compromise on our own morals and values and intellectual honesty in order to defend President Trump. And I think that both parties, to an extent, are experiencing some form of that dysfunction. But it turns off people who are more in the middle or more intellectually honest and would hold somebody accountable, be they a member of their own party or not. Any constructive criticism of Donald Trump gets me labeled as a Republican in name only or committing treason, and even can get me death threats. It's reached a fever pitch that is very uncomfortable for many in the party, and I see them leaving and the party contracting.
Mm. So on that note, let's go to an independent, Joe in Lyndhurst, New Jersey.
Hi, good afternoon. Yeah. How's everything today?
Yeah, good morning. How you doing?
Good. Yeah, so my question to Evan is, and he said something, he'd be better off served if he didn't tweet about Joe and Meek and all that. This is the problem. He's never going to change that, okay? So he is not a true politician. He doesn't even keep his mouth shut when it serves him well. For example, the Comey firing. If he had just not even said anything, he has to take credit for everything. That's his problem. He's an egomaniac. He has to say, no, it's my decision. I'm the one. I'm the man in charge. It's all about me. And so even when it would just serve him better to keep his mouth shut, he can't even do that. So he draws more attention to himself. He has no idea of what a political strategy is. It's about me, me, me. And so this is never going to change. And this is why he will really never accomplish anything legislatively for his entire term, because he's his own worst enemy, and he just can't stop. He stops progress. Let's just put it that way.
Mm. Oh, thank you, Joe, for the call. Edmund, I mean, looks like tax reform is next. You know, the House Republicans have put forward these $203 billion in spending cuts and trying to, you know, prepare to, you know, get tax reform legislation done. Why should Republicans or any other Americans have any faith that they'll be able to get that done when they can't get this health care thing done?
Well, I think that you can actually, whether or not tax reform passes, that's still a little bit of a coin toss right now. But what we do know is that the failure of health care puts political pressure on Republicans to pass some sort of bill. Right now, when we go into the midterms, all members of the House are up, and they can't have any sort of legislative accomplishment to go back and say, see what we did for you when we had both the House, the Senate, and the White House. Mm-hmm. And senators who are up for re-election in 2018 can only go back and to their conservative base and say, we gave you Neil Gorsuch. Those aren't records to hang your hat on whatsoever. So they're going to feel more pressure. And while there might be more internal disagreements about tax reform, they're going to be more willing to pass something. But at the same time, the Republican Party has a competence problem as well in its governing, in that it's going to have a hard time passing anything. We are absolutely the Keystone Cops when it comes to this. So I think that we're going to be have the momentum of freaking out that we won't have a legislative record to at least bolster us when the wind is up against us and Democrats are clearly gaining momentum and enthusiasm across the country. But at the same time, we're going to be our own worst enemies in that we're going to make strategic blunders, and there's going to be party infighting, especially between the Freedom Caucus and more moderate Democratic representatives and senators.
Well, in that light, then, I saw you tweeted in support of a potential Senate run in California by Caitlyn Jenner, the Olympic gold medalist and Kardashian family reality TV star, who is now also a trans activist. Why do you think that's a good idea?
Well, as you know, Jamil, and some of your listeners know, I've been very big about expanding the Republican Party to millennials, as well as urban voters of every race and belief system and sexual orientation. I believe the Republican Party should embrace marriage equality because it actually is a conservative idea, and that it's good to fight the caricature that we are the party of the crusty old white man. And no better way can we show that than by having Caitlyn Jenner, who's a very rational, likable woman, come out and run for Senate. It would be a suicide mission, so to speak, in terms of her winning. But I think it would be good if the Republican Party embraces an openly transgender candidate and says, yeah, we're running her for Senate and we're going to put our weight behind her because this is us in the future. Yes, in the short term, things do look bleak for the Republican Party, but we can, if we run candidates like Caitlyn Jenner, who can go out and get attention and show that we are not this caricature of the crusty old white guy, then I think that's an overall net positive for the party, and I think Caitlyn Jenner would bring a great deal to the table for us.
Again, our number is 212-433-WNYC. We have a little bit of time left for calls to Evan Siegfried, Republican strategist and author, regarding all the things Republican. So we want Republican callers, we want Trump voters to be calling. Just one other question, Evan. How does the Russia scandal hamper Republican efforts to pass major legislation, if at all?
It distracts every single day. When we're trying to go out and pass legislation that's controversial or very complex, when we're trying to go out and tell people this is what it does, and the media is not even paying attention because it's being drowned out by the Russia scandal and how the president's son, Fredo, said yes to a meeting with the Russian government or Wait. People claiming to represent the Russian government, that's bad. Additionally, I think Vladimir Putin is not tired of all the winning he's encountering. The Russian linked lobbyist with counterintelligence ties in Russia said to the Associated Press on Friday that he may or may not have left a binder full of information on Hillary Clinton in Trump Tower after that meeting. And that statements like that are designed to sow disunity and chaos in the United States. Vladimir Putin has been incredibly beneficial for this Russia scandal because of how split we are as both Republicans and Democrats. Many people feel that Republicans are not holding the president accountable. Well, the worst thing to happen to that was actually Bob Mueller becoming special counsel, because the day that he became special counsel, many Republicans on the Hill I began speaking to had begun to realize privately, we're going to need to hold the president accountable for his actions. And the second Bob Mueller was appointed, that abdicated any responsibility, because Bob Mueller is so respected, Republicans can say, it's all on Bob Mueller. We're here to focus on the agenda.
Yeah. In that light, though, I just think that why don't Republicans actually come out and say, hey, we need to have Bob Mueller let him do his job. We need to let him investigate this fully. We need all the facts on the table. I know some of them are, but then you have, you know, Republicans in the House voting against measures that would, say, address Jared Kushner's security clearance, other things that, you know, they do to obscure the facts. Why are Republicans helping Donald Trump at this point? He's not helping them.
Donald Trump is immensely popular within the Republican Party, and that goes back to the problem of them holding the president accountable. The president is at 80 points and above within the GOP. And if you go out and turn on a very popular president in your own party, forgetting the fact he's not popular throughout the country, you are going to face a primary. Look at what came out yesterday, how the White House is actively courting primary challenges to Senator Jeff Flake. The White House on its own is or is really on its own on that, because the Republicans who deal with finding Senate candidates and keeping the Senate, they are very upset, and they really don't believe that President Trump should be doing this, and you should expect to see some form of strong pushback, be it in an NRSC mailer saying we are 100% behind Jeff Flake in the coming days. But Republicans do not want to turn on the president because they know the base will turn on them.
Mm. We have to leave it there for today. My guest has been Evan Siegfried, the author of the book GOP GPS, How to Find the Millennials and Urban Voters the Republican Party Needs to Survive. Evan, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.